Hello, cyclocross friends, and thanks for tuning in to episode 195 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, Kerry Werner is in the media pit. Myself and Zach and Michael, we chat about Kerry's move to Roanoke, Virginia, his trip that he's on right now in Colorado, riding the Colorado Trail, racing, where we're at, where we're going. Just really good to catch up with Kerry, and we're going to get to that in a couple of minutes. Before we do, I want to tell you about our sponsors for this show, starting with Watt Bike and the Watt Bike Atom. The Watt Bike is a standalone smart bike. It's capable of connecting to the leading training and racing apps. It's Zwift certified, which is huge. It's got this real ride feel technology, so your inside bike feels like your outside bike. And the cool thing that I want to talk about this week with the Watt Bike Atom is that it's fully adjustable. So it's something that me at 6'5" and my wife at 5'6" could both use with only a couple minutes of adjustment between our ride. I'd love for you to go to wattbike.com/US. Go check it out. It's a really cool looking bike. I think it would be a great addition to your stable, especially during these times when we're all at home and with the winter upcoming. If you're into that virtual racing, this is the way to do it. This is the way to get precise data and make sure that when we get outside and get racing again, you are just going to be head and shoulders above everyone else. wattbike.com/US. You can use the link down in the show notes. Also on board as a sponsor this week, very excited to have them, Amanda Nauman and David Sheik, friends of the show, Wide Angle Podium contributors. They are the race directors for the Mammoth Tough, which is a gravel race that was postponed for this year, but it hasn't completely gone away. And what they have come up with is basically taking part of the Choose Your Own Adventure that was going to be incorporated into Mammoth Tough and making it its own thing that you can participate in. It's going to be called the Tough 20, the unique challenge where you create your own route. And then there's all of these cool little micro challenges that they've come up with. I mean, the materials for this, I'm reading through this, and I'm just going to give you the link to where to go because there is just so much cool stuff to do. I think they put more time and effort into building this out than most race directors do for an actual race that's happening in a place. By registering, before even doing anything, you're going to get a pair of socks, Mammoth Tough socks. You're going to get a Mammoth Tough bandana, face buff, special discounts from partners, including like 30% off one-time purchase from Orange Seal. Right there, it's worth the price of admission, and you haven't even gotten to do any of the fun stuff. Plus, if you look at the list of prizes that are available for people winning challenges, but also for raffles, it's kind of nuts. Renee Hurst tires, SDG Bel Air V3 saddles, Monster Hydro prize packs. It's just insane. And I haven't even mentioned the Niner RLT9 RDO top of the line gravel machine. Oh man, Shimano GRX DI2 on it, Easton EA70 A6 wheel set. I mean, come on. You have the chance to win that along with everything else. Go check out all the information available at mammothtough.com/challenge-tough-20. I'll put a link down in the show notes to this as well. And here is the other part of it. For being a Wide Angle Podium listener, you get 10% off registration if you use the code TUFF10. That's capital T, capital U, capital F, capital F, 10. It's not too late to get into this. The challenge goes through the end of September. We'd love to see you participate. And then we'd also love to see you next year at the Mammoth Tough, which is going to be September 18th, 2021. All right, go check it out. Go register. Use the code TUFF10. Win a bike and a ton of other cool prizes. We got Kerry Werner in the media pit, and we're talking to him. And we're going to do that right now. All right, Kerry, how's it going, man?
Things are good. Emily and I have been full gas getting the house just the way we like it.
Nice. So tell us about that. Yeah, if everybody doesn't know, your whole adventures moving and all that from Carolina, and I'm sure you still had stuff in Pennsylvania, to a new place.
Yeah. Emily and I had been living with her parents for a little while, and with the interest rates so low and just like just feeling the need to like for a change of scenery, we were like, heck, why not? And we started visiting Roanoke earlier this spring in the Roanoke's Strava stage races that they were putting on. And so we kind of got to know the area through those, and it really didn't take long at all. I think we were maybe in Roanoke for like a week, and we were like, huh, well, the houses are pretty cheap here, and like the parkway is just over there, and like there's a UCI cross race in town, so people are stoked on bikes. And we actually started looking. We would take the RV in between stages to go do open houses, and then maybe in like 3 or 4 weeks we actually closed or bought a house, like had our offer accepted, and then moved in the middle of July.
Well, I hope you tell this story to the visitors bureau there that that puts money up for the cyclocross race, so they know that it's not that it's doing what it's supposed to do. It's getting people to come to town and move there. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been on a few rides with Frank Deal, the promoter of Go Cross, already, and he's been showing me the ropes.
The CX machine.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, Carrie, with your video skills, you can just make the video for the conventions and visitor bureau and just like hand it in as a finished product, and they can, you know, earn.
Yeah, and then just like invoice them later. Cross.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I am. I have already gotten in touch with Roanoke Outside a little bit later on in October. We're going to put a little event on that's going to be part of, I don't know if you guys have heard of the MFG's The Big Idea thing that they're putting out. I'll just be working with those guys to put on an event later on in October, and got the community of Roanoke involved, and so it's going to be a pretty cool way to do like a little bit of fundraising. So I'm excited about that.
So with everything getting shut down in March, you know, we saw a lot of your peers out there who really shut everything down. It doesn't look like you ever missed a beat, if not racing, just still out there adventuring, still out there riding. What's kind of the mindset from then until now? You seem like you've always got a plan together and really didn't miss a beat.
It actually kind of starts every cross season, and like especially towards the end of cross season, and especially when we go over to Europe, when you're kind of just like getting towards the end of your motivation and you're looking for like new cool stuff to do. So every year when I get towards the end of the season, I usually like keep a list going of like some cool rides that I think of during cross season when we're not like doing big cool rides and adventuring, you know, we're on the chisel and focused and stuff. So I just keep a list going, and over the last couple of years, I just don't get to everything in the summer. And so it's been actually cool to go back and like revisit some of those ideas and use them as inspiration for maybe new things. So that's kind of where I've been.
What's been the highlight so far?
Well, for sure the Roanoke stuff is cool. Just because that satisfies a little bit of my racing tooth, just to like go out and really throttle down on some segments and, also check out like a bunch of new trails. It's been really cool. But I think it's kind of all been building up to what's about to happen. And that's, me and three guys are going to do the Colorado Trail.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah. So I'm sure you're familiar with, Russell Finsterwald, and I think Rudy Bear jumped on board. Troy Wells is coming along. And a friend of Russell's is coming. So there's going to be four of us. And we're actually leaving tomorrow morning, first thing, driving out to Colorado. We'll get there Thursday night. And then we're going to start the trail on Sunday.
What is the Colorado Trail? I'm not familiar.
Oh, let me tell you, it's been a bucket list item of mine. It is a 500-mile-ish trail that stretches from Denver to Durango. And the average elevation that the trail sits at is 11,000 feet. So wow. You're like way up there. It's beautiful riding. And then the other thing is there is 70,000 feet of climbing along the way. So there's that. But yeah, I've been really excited. When Emily and I lived in Colorado Springs for 8 months back in 2015, and we got to know the area a little bit and just kind of fell in love with the Rockies. And so this will be really cool to kind of see it all some more.
So is this like bike packing or?
Oh yeah. Yep. Sorry. So yeah. We're going to bike pack it, do it in, I think our goal is 9 days. We're not going for like FKTs or anything. We're just going to do it for fun.
You're not going to Lachlan Morton it.
No, not at all.
Okay, you can say that now, but I'm foreseeing a rematch of the U23 MTB race with you and Finsky.
Well, I already tell you right now, I'm packing a bungee cord. I'm gonna strap it to the back of Ruff's back because he's gonna have to pull me up over some of these passes.
I still remember that race. It was like you and Russell, and then it wasn't like Howie too, Grotz in there.
Yeah, Howie. Yep. Yeah. Actually, it's funny you bring that up because so we have we set up our home gym down in the basement, and John Rourke, who was Russell's team manager at the time, he would always give me crap and you know just pick on me and just funny stuff. And after I won, he got a picture made, and Bill's pointing at himself. We're on a Zoom call. And it's all coming full circle right now. Yeah, John said, hey, I got this picture. I'm sending it over to a graphics guy. He's going to rework it. And apparently Bill put my picture on the front of a Special K box because cereal box, because that's what John would call me, Special K. And, they modified the text. I think one of the standouts is 2 huge nuts in every spoonful.
Oh, my God.
I did not do the graphic design part, but Rourke was like, hey, you got any photos of Kerry winning? And I'm like, why do you need a photo of Kerry winning? I was like, okay.
Oh, okay. You were the photo guy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Someone's going to need to screen share this to me right now so I can see it.
Yeah, I was going to say it might be a good cover image for this podcast episode.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I can forward that along for sure.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that trip sounds awesome. And then so that's going to be you're doing that soon and then sort of wrapping up that and then going to Colorado Springs for the race. Are you doing anything else while out there?
Yeah, so I mean, it kind of just like those two things, what you just said. I'd do the trail, probably take it easy for a little while. And then, yeah, we did sign up we figured while we were there and since Russell was putting us up for free, we would extend the trip and really milk his lodging as long as possible and stay acclimated and then do this Pikes Peak Apex Challenge is a 4-day stage race in Colorado Springs, mountain bike stage race. And so we'll kind of culminate the trip with that and then come home at the beginning of October.
You know, if you look at the race predictor right now, you're slated to win this thing.
Well, you know, I hope everybody's looking at that. Really
this is where you either have the advantage or disadvantage of all the mountain bikers never doing USA Cycling races, so they have 0 points.
Yep.
Wait, hopefully how do you have points?
Works. I was wondering how the call-up works, so hopefully it works that way.
Yeah.
How do you have points?
Probably some local racing. From
Oh, okay.
Those guys do way too much UCI stuff. And like Bill said, not a lot of USAC stuff out west.
Have you been looking at this race for a long time as sort of inspiration for training? I mean, talk to us about like how you feel about no domestic cross season right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, kind of just having this, it's been nice and different. I got a new coach this year, so we've been taking things a lot slower, and that's been pretty easy to do with the pandemic canceling all races. So it's been a lot different for me. Normally I get through the summer and spring doing some mountain bike stuff, and then I kind of like roll that into cross season. So this year it's just been like longer miles. I wouldn't say lonely, but you know, just like doing some bigger days, and it's been fun checking out new areas and stuff. Yeah. And so this race is part of that build, and, you know, hopefully crossing my fingers, we can figure out a way to get over to Europe, because that seems like that's where the racing is going to be this year.
So if that's the plan, right now, I think what we have left is Ruts and Guts, Resolution, North Carolina, Major Taylor, and then Jingle Cross Nationals. You're just like not even looking at that and just thinking Europe's the answer?
Well, no. Yeah, it's kind of still up in the air. That's my ideal plan, is just like run. I think Becca and I are on the same page with this as well. I think our plan is to like run our visa out over in Europe. So like it'd be ideal to go over in November as soon as possible and basically just like make the trip end after Worlds. And so that would be the most ideal thing. But then with Nationals happening, you know, that kind of throws a wrench into the plan, because I think like for my sponsors and I also would not want to miss a national championship, even if it is such a, you know, such extraordinary circumstances.
So Becca posted she was talking on Twitter maybe a month ago, talking about the difficulties and the challenges of trying to get to Europe. Have you started looking into what that's going to take? I mean, you know, there's certain, it's not a travel ban, right, Bill? We're not banned from traveling, but there's definitely restrictions that seem like they need to be navigated and stuff like that. So, you know, have you started that process?
We have not, and I've been thinking about it more and more, like over the last 2 weeks, basically. Yeah, I mean, I would assume that the World Tour guys have it easier for the travel because their service courses are over there, and like they can, you know, they can use that and their income coming from over there to get in. Just not sure. Like, I don't know if we can secure start contracts and show like this is the amount of like this is this money that we are going to get by coming over and racing, and so like it's part of our living, and like maybe we can use that to get in documentation of some kind,
which is even tougher now since at least in Belgium they've decided not to give start money anymore.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think yeah, it's a good question, Zach, but I should probably be a little bit further into it at this point.
So, I mean, another question along those lines, it seems like, you know, back in, let's say, April, May, we're like, all right, we might have a cross season. So, you know, I think you talked to a lot of people. They're like, all right, business as usual, training. I think we all reached a point where we're just like, this might not happen. And it seems like with you kind of doing this bikepacking trip I just get the feeling that 3 weeks out from the season, a bikepacking trip might not be your normal prep for a cyclocross season. So did you reach a point where you changed things and were like, all right, it's time to just totally A, go on these adventures, but B, rethink?
Yeah, I mean, like, well, I kind of, back in May, Russell and I had planned this back in May or April or something. And so back then, I kind of figured that cross was going to be delayed, and so I figured that this would still kind of fit into the plan. I mean, like, you know, like I'm not saying I would do this before every cross season, but like I would work it into the plan, and I don't feel like it would make that, you know, I don't think it would be bad at all. So that was kind of the thought process there. as just a postponed start, because I know like Go Cross is done, Supercross is done, and those are the first 2 weeks of the season. So I mean, I only see it getting pushed back further, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a UCI race until November.
Yeah.
Still on the schedule.
For so, <now. laughs> this is going to be all my base, Zach, in 9 days.
Okay. Sounds good.
All your
good.
Base at elevation.
Yep. This is altitude camp.
There you go. It's good enough for Wout in the Tour de France. It's good enough for Kerry.
Yeah, I can swing it.
Well, so you normally hit the season, the last few years you've hit the season just, you know, revving it and gunning it and doing Go Cross and just racing. You know, are you at all curious to see kind of how this will be different in terms of, you know, not being, you were like the working man of U.S. Cyclocross, you and the Bexar yeah. were the working folks, you know, is this a little bit different for you? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think after last season, Becca and I both stepped back and we decided that even before all this, we were going to like maybe pick and choose our races a bit more. So, yeah, I mean, this is kind of nice. I guess if racing does open back up in November, we can just continue as business as usual and just hit them all because, you know, there's obviously not going to be that many. But, yeah, I would have rather seen the races spread out than all of the first half of the season go away to make that more, yeah, to make that better.
One of the highlights for me, at least, and I think for a lot of people last year was the vlog, right? You really kind of hit the stride with that. And it was super entertaining and it was like a way to be engaged with you and your team week by week. We talked to Rebecca and she sort of mentioned how you worked the vlog into your pre-race routine. I'm just curious to hear, like, has it completely changed the way you think about a bike race now and how you go about doing things?
Well, no, because like what I did was like, I still get ready for a bike race the same. It's just like, I think about fitting more things in. And so maybe I start getting ready 10 minutes earlier, I guess. But there's definitely like, I get to like, I've been so far removed from it at this point, I kind of forget, but like normally I get to a race and like try to walk around, check some stuff out. And then it's like, yeah, I am. It's almost like I play my race as like a storyboard and, kind of go about it that way. But yeah, I think for me, and it's something that I don't struggle with anymore, is it's really easy to focus when racing happens and like I can easily kind of not think about a camera. So like one of the things I do is try to get rid of a GoPro for somebody to film a race as soon as possible. And then like I don't have to think about anything for a really like until way after the race. Then I'm like sitting there getting dressed and cleaning up and I'm like, crap, I wonder if that kid stole my GoPro.
You could do a whole seminar on finding free enthusiastic labor to work for you, because it's believe me, I'm jealous by it. It's impressive every race that you get these people out there and they do good work for you.
Yeah, I'm appreciative.
Well, I imagine you have to be enjoying doing these vlogs because you keep doing them. And like I said, the fans enjoying them. I'm just curious, would you recommend this to other riders sort of coming up or even established like cross racers? Do you see this as like a very beneficial thing to you and your team?
I mean, I think, yeah, if it's done right and, you know, with, I guess, like thought and put together well, I think it could be a useful tool. I do think it's not for everybody. Like, I feel really weird, like talking to my camera to myself a lot.
You seem natural.
But, well, you know, it's easy around a bike race because I've come to this like realization that a lot of people know that I'm doing it, and so like it's okay. But like if I'm ever out like at a coffee shop or something, and it's like outside of the cycling community, I feel so weird, like talking to my camera.
It's the same as when you're like in a place like and you that you've parked. I've done this before where you know you've gone for a ride and you got like your car there and you start like undressing in the parking lot and not a bike race, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, contextually this is absolutely wrong.
Yeah, there's a playground next door. Usually that's okay.
Yeah. So I mean, like, if it's done right, I think it's a cool tool to kind of provide sponsors some visibility. Also, like, you know, like, photos are great. I love the work that Bruce did for us the last two seasons, and like having stills to post after every race is awesome. And then, like, you know, you build up some and you can post throughout the week about cool different things. But like, it's also very budget friendly to vlog, you know, and it really just takes like a little bit of time in front of the computer and like getting to know the software. And I don't know, feel like if you don't worry too much about like all your cuts and transitions being great, it's just like you can just pump them out and people just want to see like the content. And as long as it's put together okay, like I feel like it's cool, because people, I don't know, I feel like people feel more like they know you, and it's not so much like when you go to Europe you kind of are like behind the tape of the RVs and like outside the realm. But in the US it's cool because people, they'll come up and talk to you and like hang out, and I kind of like that.
Yeah, you talk about like the transitions and edits just sort of getting out there, but I think you're selling yourself a little short. I mean, the editing part of it, as you know, Michael and I and Zach to an extent audio wise know, isn't easy, and it seems like something that you've put some time into learning and improving over the past years. I mean, they look really good at this point.
Yeah, well, thanks, Bill. I did say a little bit of time when I said that before, but it definitely does take some time.
Yeah,
it is kind of cathartic for me at this point, because like once I sit down and get in the zone, it's actually pretty fun to like relive a weekend and then like pick the best parts that you want to share with the fans and the people watching. Cause it's like, man, sometimes I could throw together some like half hour long like episodes, but I gotta try to cut it down to like at least 15 minutes. And it's hard to pick out the good stuff sometimes.
For sure.
Tell me about it. Man. So what, one technical question, what are you editing in?
What program? I just upgraded to Final Cut Pro.
Ooh, all right.
So all last season, I was just using iMovie.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if my MacBook can handle all of it. I'm definitely not shooting in 4K anymore.
No.
So, yeah.
Do you have a graphic design background or anything like that?
I've taken some classes back in school and like just had some basics. But I do have friends that do it, and I've seen like my good friend Eric is in graphic design. And that kind of stuff's really interesting to me.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. Because you definitely have a knack for it, and it comes out looking natural.
But you don't have your own logo yet.
Ah, see, that's where you're wrong, Zach.
You do.
Yeah, I do. Actually, my friend Eric and I, we collaborated back in April or May, and he helped me get one up. And we had this like big, we had Zoom calls before Zoom calls were cool.
You didn't invite us to like unveil this, or was this in the planning phases?
I guess I'm technically unveiling it now. So nice. You got a worldwide premiere here.
Exclusive.
Yes. It's a podcast. Not much of a premiere.
I'll describe it with like the utmost like clarity.
Okay, yes, let's do this. Please describe the Kerry Werner logo.
So it's a K and a W, if you can imagine that. And it's got some kind of flowy writing, and the W looks like mountains. And it's inside a circle.
All right. Okay. I'm envisioning it. I'm seeing it as your new, I'm actually looking at your YouTube page right now because I was doing a little research. I'm seeing that replacing your YouTube profile picture.
Exactly. See, the problem is then Emily and I bought a house and like all of this kind of, we were going to do like a video and a series that kind of like was the unleash of the logo and stuff. And then we got busy. It's actually still on my reminders to like go back and put it up on the page.
So wait, does Becca have one? Cause I feel like this is going to create some jealousy and tension on the inner team competition.
That's a good question. I did all this on my own accord, so I can send, maybe I'll send her my guy and see what they come up with.
Oh yeah, we had spoken to her about also if there was going to be another pandemic guest vlog, and I guess.
Oh yeah, we were just emailing about that. I think we're going to do a Becky's basic takeover.
Nice.
So changing directions a little bit, I guess I've noticed following Stephen Hyde on the Instagrams, he's a little introspective about things. And we know that there's going to be some shakeups in terms of like, you know, where people are at in their career, new teams and stuff like that. Have you talked to any of the guys at all about Cross, what's happening, or, you know, thoughts on what it's going to look like when you guys do get back? Because I don't know, you guys have really formed kind of like a tight knit crew of competitive dudes. And it seems like there could be some shakeups when we race again.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Yeah, like everything's up in the air with everybody's training, and who knows who stayed motivated. And I don't know, it's been really fun following Curtis and his weekly Cross Academy post. He has been making me feel really bad about the fact that I have done zero of the things to get ready for Cross yet.
Yeah, he may be leading the pandemic heat check at this point for the amount of time that he's putting in.
definitely. I haven't talked to Steven much. I talked to him earlier in the spring, kind of when the news broke about his team. But I mean, if I know Steven, he's like figuring it out, and he's sitting, I can like already picture him like getting up in the morning, coffee, computer, and just like smashing keys all day to figure it out. So I still see the camaraderie that's going to be there. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. It would be interesting to see like what would happen if that first race in November went down. I look forward to it really.
Yeah. I think we've talked about this, just the three of us, that it's like that first lap of that first race when you guys are all back just seems like it's just going to be insane. Just a lot of lot of pent up aggression there.
Yeah. Yeah. The first lap of every first race of the season is always like super tense, but it'll be like a whole nother level if we go at it in November.
Yeah. Well, looking forward to that. So, I mean, you have done some racing. Looks like you and Emily did a road race. What are your thoughts on that in this time?
Yeah, we were a little apprehensive when we first signed up, but we'd done the race before, and it's just a really cool race. It's like it's out of Johnson City, Tennessee area, and the road race climbs up Roan Mountain. And so it's like the only mountaintop finish road race I've ever done. It's just pretty cool. And it was only like 3 hours away. We have the RV. We parked in a friend's driveway. So everything was okay. And then the race actually went really smooth. I was really happy. Like registration was, there was plexiglass up, and the woman doing registration was very quick and thorough, and like, we got one packet. We never had to go like check in again before every race, because this was a stage race. So there was a road race. Well, yeah, there was a road race, a TT, and then a crit the next day. And you just got your packet one time. And then literally I could have never worn a mask again because I was never around people. Just, you know, you're in the parking lot, but you're like parked and spread out, and everybody was following some semblance of social distancing. I mean, we were all outside all the time, but there was a bunch of masks. I felt safe. I mean, obviously you never know when you're in a pack and there's like,
right,
you can feel like sweat hitting your face. And like in years past, you're just like, oh, that was gross, whatever. But now you're definitely thinking about that for a long time. And I laugh, but I do take it seriously. And I don't know, Emily and I are in a unique situation where we don't have to interact with anybody. So, we are driving out west and we're staying with Russell, but I did talk to Russell about it and he was cool with it. And then then we're going to be in the mountains for a bunch of days. So I guess it's kind of like Rocky Mountain quarantine, at the same time. How bad would it suck if it kicked in when we were like halfway through? I don't know. We'll see. Crossing my fingers.
We'll check back and see.
I mean, the important question though is Sherman coming?
Sherman is coming. Yeah. He's excited because Russell has a dog, a Shiba Inu. I think that's what it is. And, they both have Instagram accounts, so they're going to
collabs.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to have a sick time.
Nice. The last question about racing, what did you do the time trial on?
My cross bike.
That was the answer I was hoping for.
I think I was the top cross bike finisher and also top hairy legs finisher of the entire
world. Awesome. I mean, you know, look at the fans want to know, Kerry Warner, fourth overall in the Omnium. I'm looking at the results right here. Did you race a crit on your cross bike too?
Yeah, man. One bike to rule them all.
Wow. That's pretty good.
They don't call it the Super Jake for nothing. I'm telling you.
Do you keep the knobbies on there?
No, I needed all the help I could get.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I know you still have packing to do, and you were kind enough to give us a half hour. We've gone a little bit over that. Zach, Michael, anything else before we let Kerry go?
No, man. Enjoy your sick trip, bro.
Yeah, thank you.
I just want to say, Kerry, I got to the sourdough game late, but we used your sourdough bread video.
Awesome.
Plus the New York Times article about the tartine bakery. And those two combined, you provide the visuals. And my first loaf, I mean, I think I tagged you in it, but it was A+. The crumb was amazing. So
awesome.
If anybody needs to bake bread, look at Kerry Warner's sourdough video, because it's actually really, really good video.
Oh, thanks. So, nice. Yeah, I actually goofed here, and I made some sourdough, and in the morning I took the leftover from the leaven and I made pancakes with it, but I didn't leave any to start the new, like, to keep the starter going.
Oh no.
And so I literally ate all of my starter. I killed it, and so now I'm in the process of trying to bring it back.
Oh my gosh.
It's the worst.
Bread disasters. Awesome. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, that was great talking with Kerry. As he gets ready for his drive across the country, we can sort of finish up our hour here with some of the other stuff going on. You know, EKZ Tour, Cross Tour, kind of coming out and saying they're ready to go, announcing a race, I think September 12th, 13th is around there.
12 and 13, yeah.
For Baden, which is one of their big races. You know, they put that out, and then I was just following up that with their Instagram, and they're hedging a little bit already, saying that the program is still provisional, and there still may be changes coming in the days to come. So we'll still keep our eyes on that. But for now, it looks like, you know, early season cross is not off the schedule, at least for Europe. Any thoughts on that for now?
Well, the timing of that was like pretty interesting because we've seen, we've seen road races are occurring, and actually a bunch of them are occurring in a very short period of time. But at the same time, against that backdrop, the UCI came out and said Worlds are canceled, which were supposed to be in Switzerland.
Right.
And then
2 weeks after the date of EKZ.
Yeah. And so do you think it's, I mean, EKZ is still granted up there as one of the top series in the world. That's not really, a tough threshold to meet for a sport. I mean, we talk about it all the time. It's not a very big sport. So you think that an event like that, I mean, what they're putting on there, they got quality racers, but as far as size goes, it's probably the same as what we see in the U.S. at a C1, C2 weekend versus, road worlds, which to make it happen, you need thousands of people working it. And plus you need, 20, 30,000 people to show up to pay the bills. Not an excuse, but it's definitely two different levels.
Right. Different situation. Obviously, it's worlds. Literally, it is, countries from all over the world. And that's sort of the idea of the travel is sort of like the big thing for a lot of us. And we've talked about it. It's just the interstate travel, cross-state travel, cross-country travel for these events. Doing something locally, is your risk is so much lower than that. So, yeah, it's... I could see how it could happen. It's interesting. I'm just looking at this flyer. They split it up into 2 days, right? So the idea of even sort of, I don't know what EKZ is like, but I guess it's similar to a UCI race in the States where it has amateur and then elites. I don't know if you guys know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've just always seen the elites. And I think that the point that you brought up there, the main difference is the international travel, not even from a safety standpoint, just from a logistics standpoint, it's not fair to have worlds when riders from the U.S. may not be able to make it. Riders from Canada, I don't think are traveling at all. I don't think any Canadians are traveling. You got Asia, you got all these other countries, Africa, trying to make it through, where EKZ is, predominantly still a Swiss event with some Dutch, Belgian, French, Italians who kind of make the drive to compete. But I think that's not as many people getting on planes and having travel restrictions, put in place.
So I'm guessing we don't necessarily know what their business model is, because I think that's one thing on our last episode that we talked about with Belgian cyclocross that just is still a big question mark, is they function based on ticket sales. And so I don't know to what extent... I don't know. I should know. I mean, I was editor of Cyclocross magazine. I should know more about the EKC. But to be fair, I asked every year. I was like, send your press releases in English. And they always sent them in French and German. And I was like, I can't work with this, guys. I just can't work with this. So I wonder if that plays into it, is maybe if they still have their sponsors that can fund the series without relying on those gate receipts.
Yeah.
That could be, that's something. Because we saw... there's already a race that got canceled in Belgium and replaced by a venue that's never hosted a race. So we're already seeing some cancellations on the Belgian series. So one thing, I guess, I think on the last podcast I had said that I would definitely be keeping my eyes on, how these world tour events go. And I'm actually a little bit surprised that they're still going strong. I thought there was a big part of me that thought they'd do one of them and they'd be wow, 18 of our riders got tested positive and we're done. And it seems like they're still kind of pressing on and the tour isn't canceled. I thought for sure that would have happened by now. So I'm weirdly have the sense that maybe some cyclocross might actually happen in Europe this fall.
I've been watching a ton of road racing and it's been amazing to have that and to sort of step back into that sort of that mindset of that watching bike racing. But you do see that the cases are going up in France. So it's like, it's still everything is still continuously up in the air. And I think that's obviously hard for everybody to just wait and see. You really can't make any plans. I mean, talking to Kerry, he's still maybe going to race some domestic cross, maybe going to go to Europe. I don't know. Yeah, I feel like the road racers are kind of like stoked because they are already in it, right? And they're doing it and they're not having to worry about something in the future. And like, if the rest of the season gets canceled, they've done something. But I don't know. Yeah.
I think the sign that it's gone back to some sort of normal racing and normal schedule is at least for me twofold. One, people in the US already complaining about coverage. So that seems to be top on people's lists of things to worry about with professional racing. And the second thing, in Europe and at these races, the biggest complaint is not safety protocols for COVID-19, it's safety protocols for the course conditions and the course layout and putting riders in danger for what they're actually riding on.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to say that I had to use a VPN to watch a race the other day.
Going back to the old days.
Yeah, I hadn't done that in so long because we've been so spoiled with Flow Bikes and NBC Sports Gold. And I wanted to watch, and this is very apropos, Dwars Dar Hagerland, a Belgian gravel race that had a bunch of CX stars in it.
Yeah, it was the Media Pit Grodio crossover event.
Right, yeah. I mean, Amanda, where are you at? just a spoiler alert, the top crosser was Tunarts. He got ninth place.
Yeah, and wasn't that the one that the Quick Step was complaining about the sand section?
Yeah. No, it did. There was a photo, and it did look like a sand pit from a cross race. It looked pretty bad.
I don't know. I think it's fun, you know, throw a little. Although it seems like there are some features that have actually created like legit safety problems.
Yeah, but they're like straight up road ones that have been in races year after year.
So are a lot of the race. So I know watching the little previews of big races, which if you haven't watched the little guy, my God, those are hilarious.
They're so good.
Over at the Wide Angle Podium YouTube page. But I mean, he's been talking about a couple of them. Like some of the races, like towns are just being like, please stay out of our town and don't come here. So has there been? I haven't been paying the closest attention. Are a lot of these races seeing new courses and kind of, you know, having that situation with kind of changing it up?
I think the only one was Milan-San Remo, where they didn't do so much along the coast because, not because of COVID precautions, but because it's peak beach season.
Oh, okay.
The exact opposite.
Right. Okay. They're like, okay. we want people to come to our town. We need, you know, it's a southern... Not is that just Northern Italy, or is it? Yeah, Northern Italy. They, you know, they need the tourism, and they need the people to be there. They don't want to close down roads. So, I think that, you know, Tour de Poland with the terrible crash with Jakobsen. That's the same downhill sprint they've had forever, and the riders complaining about Tour of Wallonia, which is someone showed a photo of like the most bombed out New Orleans road.
I saw that one.
that apparently they've been racing on forever. So this is, I think, what's interesting to come out of this, and is the riders really speaking out, and basically saying like, you know, they don't really have a union that's very strong, and so this desire to actually stand up and speak up for their safety, and I think that's hopefully maybe one positive thing that can come out of that. I would like to see those riders, because they are super vulnerable, and you think about how vulnerable the men are, that the women are even, you know, 10 times more vulnerable with their contracts and just the shitty like race team directors, and just if something can positive come out of this, which would be like really strong riders unions, that would be great.
And back in the US, it's kind of like we're still in the same who really knows what's going on pattern that we've seen for a while, with some races happening and a lot of other races not happening, and riders kind of having to wade those waters for what's best in this situation.
Well, it seems like, though, that by and large, the cross community has kind of made their decision about how that's going to be. I mean, pretty much every series that I've seen, I mean, you know, Cross Crusade was the latest one.
Right.
All the ones here in the Midwest, Bill Mabra canceled, you know, like New England canceled. So it seems like everyone's kind of made that decision. So I just almost even wonder, you know, there's a few of these UCI races in the season, but who is still going to be trying to put on races? I mean, I know I was admittedly, I was looking to see here in locally in Minnesota if anyone was just going to have like informal practices or something where I could go do some cyclocross. And it was just like, no, everyone's just like, we're not doing it this year. So it seems like at least for now, the decisions have been made independent of USA Cycling. And so maybe that's maybe they skated a little bit. Maybe that's a good thing that there weren't more, I don't know, promoters or whatever, trying to be the quote unquote heroes and forcing this discussion slash, because I know people have a lot of opinions about it.
Yeah.
Us included. Yeah. I don't know.
And I know, and you know, I just as full, well, I mean, we talked about it with Carrie a little bit. So I've sort of put myself in that position where I'm going to go to a mountain bike race and it's like, okay, is this different? Is this, what are the circumstances that make this okay, that other racing isn't okay? And I'm not sure I know, you know, and it's, I know. And then is it hypocritical to go cover this if you don't think it's the right thing to do? I don't know about that either. These are the things that I'm grappling with. I know for myself, I don't need to be around anybody. You know, I have a hotel room that I've already booked just for me that I will park my rental car in front of, and I have anywhere from 70 to 400 millimeter lenses at my disposal. So I don't need to be near any other person this whole trip, but it's I guess the question then that I have to, and there, you know, I have people that I work for, but the question is that to grapple with, like, is it okay in this instance, in this discipline, you know, when we've seen mountain bike races happening and where it's not a mass start. And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. That's just like this ongoing thing. But at the same time, it's like, I am as guilty as everyone else in that an opportunity to go do something came up that I'm going to go cover. So I don't know. It's a tough one to figure out.
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of that, I would say, among the, I would just say the influential voices in American cycling and especially in cyclocross. I think people are grappling with that. I think we've all acknowledged that, like, decisions at the societal level are not being made to actually address this. And so it's like, what do you have to, you know, if you reduce your risk to a minimal amount, and I think this is kind of the point Kerry was making, you know, and like do something to like be happy. It's like, is that wrong? You know, I mean, you're going to grapple with it yourself, but I think we're all just kind of getting to the point where it's like, we ain't fixing this anytime soon. And so if by and large you reduce your exposure, and if you go do this, and if you spend most of your time not going on group rides and wearing a mask and staying home in your everyday life, I don't know if I can really like fault you at this point.
Yeah. And I think if we look back and even what we were talking about on Grodio with Mid-South and stuff like that, it was that what I think we all still have a problem with is these mass gatherings, these celebrations, these finish line parties, and, you know, or even pre-race parties. And yeah, I mean, I don't think anything that like that is happening at Apex Pikes Peak. And if it did, that would be the thing that I'd be like, nope, I'm out, because that's just, that's still just irresponsible, you know, whereas the risk of being outside with a mask on, I think we've found, is not the biggest problem that we face.
Yes. Yes. I think you are correct. This seems like a good segue to talk about nationals. We've actually made it 20 minutes into this episode before we talked about like the big news. I guess it was a week ago.
Yeah.
So we,
I don't forgot know that we haven't even covered this. Wow. Okay. I was like, what big news?
Well, I would like to say that, like, I'm proud of myself. I predicted that Chicago would not hold nationals, but I was a little bit surprised that they're still going to try to do it. That was shocking.
Well, the news, because Michael was there to see me like realize this in real time on Twitter, because I did not carefully read Jingle Cross's announcement. And I was like, oh, Jingle Cross is canceled. And then I'm like, oh, Jingle Cross canceled. And I was like, oh, and then reading through, I was like, holy crap, Jingle Cross is having nationals?
Talk about burying the lead there.
Yeah, right? So I was like, oh, wait, got to quickly change this around. So Iowa City, Johnson County, unable to hold a race in October, ready to hold an event just as big, if not bigger, in December. You know, nationals now in Jingle Cross because Iowa's crowd thresholds would allow it where Illinois would not.
It's a little mind-blowing that they're literally going COVID venue shopping.
Yeah.
And that just seems like, I don't know. That part is just kind of like interesting.
Because they only moved, what is it, a 4-hour drive? Chicago to Iowa City?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah. That's caught 4 hours. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and like Illinois had a very like strict protocol. And I think like, you know, one could argue that in terms of like limiting the transmission, like it was kind of like they're getting to where we should be. Right. Like it was, you know, we have to have this under control and you otherwise you're not having mass gatherings. And to say, well, you know, because it's a nationwide pandemic at this point, you know, there are no places that aren't. Illinois is no different than Iowa.
Right. That's why I said the 4 hours. It's like it's, you know, a couple hundred miles away. They didn't move.
Yeah,
like
the next state over.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so we were talking in the green room. There was a race here in Wisconsin, which is fine. And not very many people went. So whatever. But, you know, I looked at the results and like half the people were from not Wisconsin. So there were people that came from probably 5 or 6 different states. And I mean, I guess I could have seen saying, all right, well, for the sake of our elite athletes, we're going to have a 1-day elite UCI only nationals, we're going to do this. And like, maybe you could have, but like, I don't know. It just seems irresponsible to me to give people that option to travel from across the country for, you know, as some people have pointed out on Twitter, like there literally is no season. Like this is not the culmination of like, most of us aren't going to be able to race this year. And so like, what's the point in like creating this dangerous situation where you're going to have people flying from across the country to attend this event? You know, what's it the culmination of? Like, what, you know, like, hey, there's nationals. Let's go do this. Like, I don't know. It seems irresponsible to me. I guess I'll just, that's.
Yeah, I still am like, I feel like it's, the chances of it still happening are, you know, 50% less. I don't know. I can't even plan on it like happening. I just, it's up in the air. Who knows? So everything that's planned and said, it's just kind of like just being thrown out there in the ether, and you know, and it might fall, it might land.
So you guys are in the media pit. We're in the media pit. I mean, like, let's say it does happen, because I'm not convinced it will either. Are we going to cover it?
I don't know. I mean, at first I was like, absolutely not, and I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, when we had that episode, that photographer episode, where I think Bruce, who I look at as sort of my voice of reason, was kind of in the same boat, where he's like, I don't know. I'm still leaning towards not going, but I guess I wouldn't say that definitively. It's a weird spot. I mean, we're in a really weird spot in that I think, Zach, for you and I, for covering this sport for as long as we've covered the sport and kind of fighting for legitimacy as two of the people who do a lot of the work domestically to cover the sport, is okay, you are a journalist then, right? You are in that position as journalist. What is your journalistic duty versus your moral duty? I mean, I think is what the conflict is, at least as I see it, is like, if I have personal feelings against this event happening, should that also get in the way of my professional feelings towards the coverage of the event, without shying away from what's going on? But doesn't that still mean we should be there?
That's a good question. And I mean, I don't even know. I mean, it seems like athletes are going to be conflicted too. And I know there would be a lot of pressure on them to go. I don't know. It just seems like right now it's just kind of like literally every other nationals got canceled. Right. Yeah. You know, and at the same time, like, is this going to like reflect positively on our sport when, you know, Big Ten football is canceled and Lord knows what's going to happen with the NFL and, you know, stuff like that. And it's like, hey, but we're like, hey, guess what? We're having nationals.
Yeah. I mean, so, but like, you know, how many people go to a football game?
No, I mean, that's true. Yeah.
I guess one thing I'm thinking about is and thinking about whether I would go to nationals as a photographer and as a podcast host and maybe a videographer is something that I think maybe other athletes are. Is like, well, like, no one's going, it's canceled, we're not going. Okay, it's happening. One writer is like, well, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna get that, you know, I'm gonna take advantage of that. So another writer is like, well, then I'm gonna go. So there is a bit of a competitive aspect, right? Like, if you don't go, then you're gonna miss out on something. Or it's like, if I don't go and take photos, you know, I don't have any jobs, I don't have any clients lined up or anything. So, but like, you know, I could be the, you know, you could be the only photographer there, right? And then people would want to hire you for the writers there. So yeah, it does put you in this position where you are pulled from different sides.
And, it is the classic Mabra cross, urban cross dilemma. Urban okay. cross. So Mabra cross changed their rules years ago from being able to drop a race for the series to not being allowed to drop a race for the series. And then what happened is that we had one race in Charlottesville. It was a okay race, but it was a far away from everyone. And everyone kind of decided, we're just not going to that race, you know? We're just not going to that race, and then it's not going to affect anybody's points, and then we can just do the other races. This is like all the people, and then you look at the registration, and one guy's like, points and they register, and then the next guy is like, well, if he's going, I'm going. And then it just became, we all went to Charlottesville, and that's kind of what nationals is.
Well, and I say this in all sincerity, I think this is where USA Cycling right now is really kind of dropping the ball. And, you know, people like Becca have expressed this, it's like they just want certainty, and they yeah. want They don't want to be put in this position. And we saw it like with people who went to Mid-South, and we saw it with, you know, Colin Strickland took a bunch of shit for doing a driveway series crit. And it's like, well,
right.
They're professionals. They kind of have to do that. They're kind of obligated to do these things. And it's kind of on people in above them to make these decisions to not put them in that position to decide, I think.
And that was my Mid-South argument too, is that it's kind of that passive aggressive way of saying, you know, it's the non-apology apology. It's saying, hey, if you don't feel safe coming to our event, we understand. We have compassion for you. Just stay at home. So it's kind of making you look like the wimp because you don't want to go race, as opposed to just saying, hey, we're just not going to do this. We're going to punt. We'll take the L on this and we'll come back next year. And then you're not putting people in this position where they're like, ah, man, I don't want to look like I don't have what it takes to go to nationals, and I'm letting this, this pandemic stop me. So I guess I got to go. And that's, you know, and because we're dumb bike racers, that's the way we think. Somebody puts a challenge up there and you're going to be like, oh, I can do that. Can't say I can't.
Well, and I think, you know, and it seems like some of the promoters who have chosen to do races or like whatever, they're treating it. I don't know. They're treating it like it's a heroic, like, let's say post 9/11, like we canceled everything the weekend after. And it was like, no, we're going to move forward. We're going to bravely go on and we're going to hold our events. And it was like
they're doing some winning.
Yeah, no, but like I get that. Like yeah. we were saying, like, you know, in this situation, but like it's a fucking pandemic. Excuse my French. Like it's not. We're not it. There's more important things than you. It's a public health problem and it's a virus that's not going away. You're not winning over anything. You're just making it worse. And I don't know. I just there's that aspect of it too, by, you know, the scheduling of like, I'm being brave by holding event. Yeah. And it's like, no, you're not. You're really not.
And Nationals is something, especially in Iowa in December, that you're not going to be outside. You know, half of Nationals is inside in contained. You know, we know right. that, I mean, Jingle Cross takes place in, you know, the vendors, everything. There's just barns. You're buying stuff, you're in a barn. You know, we talked about on the photographer's pit, what was it, the stable? What were we, the lens jockeys?
yeah, in the stable. At Jingle Cross.
Yeah, we're basically saying that the press room was just, you know, going to be off limits if it happens. I mean, we're just not going to...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not
yeah,
going to go in
point.
There. But that's, it's a much, you know, I keep putting this back to my conscience with this Colorado race. It's a different situation in that I think you're kind of forced to these close contact situations. But
yeah, no, I mean, like, it'd be cool. Like, I'd love to bring back Jingle Cross. Like, bring it back, like, in December. But you're right. Like, you're going to want to be inside. Like, I can assure you, it's probably going to be cold.
Is it? Yeah. Is it cold in Iowa in December, guys?
Yes.
I'm assuming that was rhetorical.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, okay. December's balmy in New Orleans. So,
Well, and I mean, you know, maybe you could sell me on it, like a venue like Reno, where it was actually pretty pleasant and you could be outside and it was 50, 60 degrees every day and no chance of rain. And I don't know. But man, you're right, Bill. Like, everyone's going to want to be inside.
or huddled under a tent with a space heater and, you know, yeah. It's a different situation.
Also, Mount Crumpet. That's, I mean, in a good year, that's a lot of, a lot of close contact and who knows what's spreading around up there.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about like juniors trying to climb Mount Crumpet when it's frozen or something.
Well, were you there for the winter ones, Zach?
I've been to a couple. My first ever Jingle Cross race started and it was 15 degrees out. And I remember I crashed. Like, there was the coming off Mount Crumpet over by the sand pit. There was a turn on a gravel path. Like, it was the gravel path was at like the apex of the turn. And, you know, I was in my second year and I went down and just destroyed my right leg. Didn't know anything was wrong with it until after the race because it was so cold. And then I get to the barn and I'm cleaning it off and I'm like, oh my gosh, like my leg hurts so much. So that was my intro to Jingle Cross. Yeah, I mean, I would love to see it back some, you know, in the winter, sometime in the future, just not probably 2020. Yeah. It's been a year. I wanted to touch on a point though, going back to talking about Europe, that a couple different angles, but I mean, start with the people's champ, you know, the millionaire, soon to be father, people's champ. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm loving it. I'm an unabashed Wout supporter, I think, at this point. Like, he's the people's champ and it has been awesome to see.
Yeah, 100%. Wout. I mean, you've probably heard me say this on the internet already, but who had Wout winning a road monument before Matthew Vanderpoel? I mean, it wasn't me, but I'm like you, happy to see Wout do that and pull it off.
I can also tell you the way that guy is still loved and adored, even in his quote down years in cyclocross for the last couple seasons, Belgians are just have to be like out of their head over this. He was such like the king of cyclocross, even when he wasn't doing well, and they loved him when he went to the road. Now he's just, man, that guy. He I don't know if he drinks, but he'll never buy a beer again.
No, this is probably like a rough draft segment that never got to air. But Wout and his wife's baby announcement, right? What was his tweet that he didn't social distance?
He said we weren't very good at social distancing.
So I think what I was gonna go for on the rough draft was like, what do you think the gender announcement was gonna be for Wout Van Aert and his wife? And one of my ideas was that he was going to take a tubular. Someone was going to put the appropriate powder in a tubular, and he was just going to pump it up to like 120 PSI until it popped. Or, because we know that Wout is not that good at bunny hopping, he was going to bunny hop some barriers with the tubulars until he cased it, and the appropriate colored powder came out.
Wow.
I got mine.
Okay.
He's gonna have his cap on, his Jumbo Visma cap on. He's gonna take it off, and the little white streak is gonna be dyed either pink or blue.
There we go.
So we were, and I don't know if it'll be out before this, but on a forthcoming episode of our virtual racing podcast, we were coming up with new power ups, and I declared I want to see the Wout Van Aert, and I want the little, you guys have seen Zwift, I want the icon to just be his hair. It's just the like top of his head and his hair, and it's like you turn into Wout and you just turn into Superman and gain like 200 watts for 30 seconds or something. I think that would be, I would be all about the Wout power up.
They could get a little guy to do the art for it.
He's already got it done. Episode one.
That would be fantastic. I would get rid of my long hair on Zwift to have the Wout cut.
The Wout cut.
Yeah.
Oh man, that would be. So I think like one reason that I am intrigued about the potential for a European cyclocross season is I think what we're seeing is that like there's just these huge wild cards in terms of what people did with their training. Like in a traditional year, it's very cut and dry, especially on the road. Like you go do your altitude camp, you do your team training camp, you come in and you either do the classics or the grand tours or whatever. And it's pretty, there's no surprises. I mean, there might be. For various reasons, but it's pretty cut and dry. Where this year, it just threw everything into the blender and no one knew what to do, right? Like, yeah. What did you do? Like, how did you prepare for this? So, I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see if we do have a cyclocross season. Like, who gets their training right and who doesn't?
Has the what's wrong with Matthew Vanderpool talk started yet, Michael?
A little bit. I mean, he got third a couple of races, and he put up a good effort in Lombardia. There was a huge climb in Lombardia at the end, and he dropped Michael Woods, but got dropped by the leaders. Some were blaming his disc brakes, but no, I think everybody is waiting for Vanderpool to come back with a vengeance and maybe do a Flanders Roubaix double.
Yeah, and you brought up the thing that, as cyclocross people, although Zach and I being anti-gear, I guess the revelation not only of Wout winning, but Michael, it's what he's doing it on. What has happened with Wout and his bike gear choices?
Good old-fashioned rim brakes, man. Not quite cannies, but...
So do we think he's going to be sporting the cannies during cross season, just bringing that tech over?
Not at all, no.
I will say I'm enjoying this. I own a Bianchi. It's not as nice as Wout's, but, I have rim brakes, and I'm just feeling pretty good,
So how do you
need that Wout power-up, though. Like,
you own a Bianchi. You own a – it's Celeste, right?
You got to go Celeste. Yeah.
How do you feel about Peter Flack just continuously going on these Twitter diatribes about Bianchi bikes and the color and doesn't match? What do you think? Are
we talking about how it matches with the Jumbo yellow?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a disaster. Wout had like the all time great. I think he had a great tweet last year where he was like in the green jersey at a race on his Celeste Bianchi with a yellow helmet or something. And he was just like, he's like, yeah, I'm not doing the best job matching or something. It was pretty funny. I think that was like the last thing I wrote for CX Hairs was my Wout piece that did like so well. And it was just like, I don't know. I feel like kind of validated, like,
yeah,
the people's champ doing it for the people, even though he's a millionaire.
All right, guys. I think we did it. Good chat.
All right.
Dear cycling friends, we accept the fact that we have created the premier gravel and road racing podcast, and we don't think you're crazy to ask us who we think we are. You see us as you want to see us, in the simplest terms, in the most convenient definitions. But what we found out is that each one of us is
a hobby blogger,
a gravel pro,
and a curious newbie.
And you can find us on the Wide Angle Podium Network. Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Grodio Podcast.